السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، نحمده ونسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، إلها واحدا أحدا فردا صمدا حيا قيوما، نؤمن له بالربوبية ونقر له بالعبودية. من يهدي الله فهو المهتدي، ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا. ونشهد أن سيدنا محمدا عبده ورسوله.
اللهم صل على محمد.
أرسله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله. اللهم صل وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد، كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين، إنك حميد مجيد. صلى الله وسلم على أوصيائه وخلفائه وعترته وأهل بيته. عباد الله، أوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله عز وجل. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والعصر، إن الإنسان لفي خسر، إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر. صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. Among the first narrators of the incident which took place on Ashura was a gentleman by the name of Hamid ibn Muslim. And Hamid ibn Muslim was a reporter, a narrator, who was sent with the army of Umar ibn Sa'd to Karbala from Kufa. And he, as a reporter, did not claim to take any sides. His claim was that he was there for the sake of observation. And what Hamid ibn Muslim and others who were also there on that day reported, eventually they became part of the larger narrative, and that narrative is the account of what happened to Imam Hussein and his family members and companions on that day, and what happened after that day as well. So some ask the question, is that if there were no surviving male members from the family or the companions of Imam Hussein, then who narrated the events which took place? Well, there were a number of people that narrated. One is reporters, such as Hamid ibn Muslim. Others were those that were present on that day that fought against the Imam. Because what you find later happened down the road was that when vengeance was sought, and when those who perpetrated the crimes on that day were put to justice a few years later, they admitted, many of them admitted out of guilt exactly what they had done. They provided the details for what they had done. And so reports were taken from that. But there are no greater reports than the reports of the imams themselves that came after. So the report of the fourth imam, Al-Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, who was there on that day, and who was ill and could not fight, but was there to witness everything that happened. Likewise, the traditions of the fifth imam, Al-Imam Muhammad al-Baqir as well. The traditions of the sixth imam, Al-Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Their reports, and the question then becomes, well, where did they receive their reports from? Simply to the fact that they were divinely inspired, that they received reports one from another. And, you know, perhaps the most profound and touching reports comes from the imams themselves. You know, the way that the tragedy is described through their words and through their expression is different than the way that it is described in the expression of narrators who were there, who simply happened to be there on that day. And there's, you know, so much detail, so much personal detail, it's amazing. And when we take into the fact that the imams were not speaking simply to arouse emotion or to over-exaggerate a certain point, they addressed things as they were in all areas of their life. There was never an exaggeration. In all areas of their life, they told it as it was. And so when you look at these reports, it really has a profound effect. The fifth imam, for instance, just as an example, this is just one example, the fifth imam describes the state of his uncle Al-Abbas when he was fetching water. He says that when he put his hands through the river, and he felt the coolness of the water, he says that the heart of my uncle Al-Abbas was like a burning piece of charcoal. That's the heat and the thirst, that the immense heat and thirst that he felt on the inside, but still he was willing to toss the water, to give up the water, because he could not see himself to quench his thirst while his brother was thirsty. And these are details which are narrated through the words of the imams. They're not narrated through any other means. So really, when you take into consideration what they said, just look at, for instance, the supplications, the ziyarat, the visitation which is recited when one visits the imam. These are narrated from the imams themselves. In one of them, the sixth imam, Al-Imam al-Sadiq, he has a number of ziyarat which are narrated, which he encouraged to be recited. And in one of them, he says the following to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, addressing his grandfather and addressing the family members and the companions. He says, "I bear witness, أشهدُ لقد اقشعرت لدمائكم أظلة العرش." He says, "I bear witness that the arsh," and however you want to describe the arsh, the throne of God, the celestial realm, the foundations of that has been shaken because of your blood that has been spilled. So, you know, to the imams, it was not a matter of poetic expression. It was not a matter of exaggeration. It was a matter of telling the event as it was. What that tells us is that when you look at the battle that took place, on the surface, for some people, it looks like a political battle. It looks like a political struggle. If you were to see it completely as an outsider, with no prior understanding, with no context put into place, most people would probably look at it as a political struggle. And that's why even among Muslims, I'm not talking about non-Muslims, even among Muslims, there are those who throughout the history said that he fought and it was a political struggle. Some even go to the extent to say that he fought and was murdered by the sword of his grandfather, meaning that he crossed his boundaries and he went out of line, and this is what happened. Because this is politics, usually. There's a winner and a loser. But looking at the words of the imams, we notice that there's such a profound effect to what happened on that day. So it was much larger than just something which was political. It was manifestation of good versus a manifestation of evil. And when you look at both sides, and when you begin to weigh in and take into consideration what happened, you realize that it was much bigger than just the political battle. It was truly good versus evil. You look at Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family members and his companions, the people that fought on his side. They came from various backgrounds. You had, of course, the Imam himself, who was the grandson of the Prophet of Islam. But then he had companions that were not necessarily from a noble lineage, as what was considered to be a noble lineage at that time. Joan, for instance, who used to be a servant of Abu Dharr, who was a companion of the Prophet, and then after Abu Dharr passed away, Joan worked in the households of the Imam. So first in the household of Imam Hassan, and then in the household of Imam Hussein. And by the way, Joan, by the time Ashura happened, Joan was already a free man. People referred to him as the slave. He wasn't a slave, he was a free man. But after earning his freedom, because of the love that he saw, because of the nobility that he saw, he decided to stick around. He didn't want to abandon the people that he had loved to serve throughout his life. And so, when Imam Hussein gives him permission to leave, he tells him, "You're free of our allegiance. You don't owe us anything. You don't have to stand here and fight on this day. You're free." And so he turned to him, he said, "At times of comfort, I used to eat from your leftovers. And now at a time of conflict, at a time of distress, I'm gonna up and abandon you, I'm gonna leave you." And then he tells the Imam, he says, My lineage is not a noble lineage. I don't come from a noble lineage. But perhaps if I stand by your side and if I fight and God honors me with serving you and attaining martyrdom side by side with you, perhaps that will compensate for the lineage that I don't have. Perhaps that will now bestow honor upon me. This was one man. Another man who was Christian, and he joined the ranks of the army of the Imam, and he fought side by side, and he fell side by side with the Imam. Him and his wife. And his wife was the first lady to fight in the battlefield side by side. Another man, Zuhayr ibn al-Qayn, who was not a follower of the Ahlul Bayt at all. And the journey that the Imam took, in one point, in one stopping point, he comes into contact with the Imam, and out of a few words that the Imam has with him, he completely changes his path, and he becomes one of the commanders of the army of the Imam on that day. So different backgrounds. This is to tell us that there's no one standard. If the cause is great, if the cause is noble, it doesn't matter what background you come from. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. On the other side, we see the same, that evil is also manifested in different ways. So when you commemorate Imam Hussein, when you honor his struggle, when you honor his sacrifice, when you're standing up against something, know that you're not only standing up against one thing named Yazid ibn Muawiyah. That's not the point of commemorating the tragedy on the day of Ashura. Yes, Yazid was, by the words of the Imam, by the description of the Imam, he says that because Yazid had sought his allegiance before he left Medina to Mecca to Karbala, he sought his allegiance. He said, "You have to pledge allegiance." And Yazid was in Damascus, and he wanted the Imam's allegiance, and the Imam was in Medina at that time. So the Imam said, he said, "Yazid is a womanizer. He's drunk all the time. He's licentious. He's a gambler. He's a murderer. He takes lives without thinking twice about it." And he said, simply put, "Mithli la yubayu' mithlih." A man like me doesn't shake the hands of a man like him, doesn't pledge allegiance to a man like him. It doesn't happen. So Yazid was a certain type of person, but who was with you? Who supported Yazid? Because it wasn't Yazid himself. It wasn't him by himself. Who supported Yazid? Well, if you look to the other side of the battlefield, you'll also find different types of people. You know, one of the biographers, one of the late biographers of the Imams, Sheikh Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi, who passed away, I believe it was last year or the year before, who had written basically an encyclopedia, a compilation on the lives of the Imams and the infallible. So it's a 14-volume compilation, and each one is dedicated to one of the infallible members of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. So when discussing what happened on the day of Ashura, and of course in his volume on Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, he says that what amplifies the tragedy is so many different types of people who took the opportunity to fight against the Imam because there's something that they wanted. So he says one type of people, he says the opportunists. There were people who were opportunists. People who simply wanted to benefit something. There was something in return that they were going to get. Some sort of compensation that they were going to get. Not that they were completely ignorant and they didn't know what was going on. They knew who they were fighting. They knew whose life they were about to take. They understood the sanctity of that household. And the Imam had made this completely clear on that day. We know many times the Imam stood in front of them and he let them know. He said, listen, do you know who you're fighting? Do you know who I am? Do you know what lineage I come from? Is it clear to you? He wanted to make it clear so that there's no excuses. That if you fight against me, there's no excuses after that. So some of them, they realized that, but they were opportunists. Such as Umar ibn Sa'd himself. Umar ibn Sa'd was promised a governor position. He knew that if he was to lead the army against Imam Hussein, they were going to give him the governorship of Ar-Ray, which is today, present-day Iran, south of the capital. He was promised the governorship of that area, even though he knew what he was doing was wrong. But he was an opportunist. He wanted the opportunity. And so he jumped on the opportunity. And there were many different people who sought that opportunity as well. He says, number two, there were mercenaries. People who were simply looking for a paycheck. And it didn't matter what was going to happen. And he says, these are the type of people that, after committing the deed, after taking the lives of Imam Hussein, his family, and his companions, they went on to loot everything that they could find. They began to loot the dead bodies. They began to take jewelry and clothes and things that they thought were valuable that they could in turn sell and receive a profit for. Mercenaries, and that's what mercenaries do. And those are the people that we read the reports that ran after. And again, this is, by the way, this is what the Imams tell us. This isn't an exaggeration to make it sound like it was, you know, it was, because sometimes there's a tendency for that to happen as well. Is that some people try to portray it in a way which is unrealistic and might say things which actually did not happen. But this comes from the account of the Imams, that little girls were running around and grown men were ripping earrings from their earlobes. Those were the guys that they wanted to get their hands on whatever they could. Even stealing the ring of the Imam from his finger after he was dead. So that's another group of people. And another group, which perhaps are the worst of the worst, are there were people there that just had a bloodlust. They wanted to see blood. And history has shown us all sorts of people who have a bloodlust, who will take advantage of any opportunity to show their true nature on the inside. And today it happens all across the world. People who are twisted, people who are sick, people who have an evil bloodlust in them, and they found an opportunity to go and satisfy their hunger, to quench their thirst, so to speak. And so there were people who existed on that day. I mean, imagine a man like Harmala, who, you know, you have to ask, where do you get the heart to slaughter a six-month-old with an arrow by shooting an arrow into his neck? That doesn't come from anywhere but a bloodlust that you have. And then there were people who were compelled. They were brought there because they were part of an army, and we know for those people, it's unexcused because the Imam told them on a number of occasions within that day that listen, or within the few days that also preceded that, listen, this is what you're about to do. And then there was another group of people, and those were the remnants of the Khawarij. And we know who the Khawarij were. The Khawarij were the seceders, the ones who had seceded from the army of Imam Ali, the father of Imam Hussein, and they actually fought against him during one of the battles, and they were almost completely annihilated. But there were a handful of them that remained. There were remnants, and they had influenced other people as well. And so some people who stood there on that day, their purpose was that they had enmity towards Imam Ali alayhi salam. Because the Imam told them, Imam Hussein told them, he said, listen, I am the grandson of the Prophet. You realize this. I am the grandson of Khadija. Do you know which family I come from? And they said, yes, we know it. We know your grandfather, we know all of that, but we don't like your father for what he did to us. He fought against our fathers, we have to fight back. And that's why when they brought the army of, the family of Imam Hussein to Damascus, and when Yazid saw the family, when he saw the woman, he began chanting and cheering. And he said, لَا خَبَرٌ جَاءْ وَلَا وَحْيٌ نَزَلْ. He said, there's no such thing as revelation. This whole revelation thing that Muhammad was talking about is non-existent. And this is the one that some insist until this day they call Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the believers. لَا خَبَرٌ جَاءْ وَلَا وَحْيٌ نَزَلْ. He says, there was no revelation. This is all a hoax. This is all made up. And he said that I wish this scene that I'm witnessing right now, I wish my masters at Badr, who were the opponents of the Prophet, could now witness this. The revenge that I have taken upon the family of the Prophet. So for him it was revenge. It was satisfying that need that was in him, that desire, that evil desire that was in him. But what this tells us is that it wasn't just what we perceive it at the surface, that there were two groups that were fighting politically. I mean, it was much, much bigger than that. On the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, different types of people, they're all united. On the side of Umar ibn Sa'd, there were also people who were united in a cause. And on that day, Imam Hussein said that the wrath of God, because in the Quran we read about the wrath of God towards different nations and towards different tribes for different things that they had done. So Imam Hussein quotes on that day, he says, the wrath of God is upon this group of people because they did this, and that group of people because they did that. He says, the wrath of God will be upon the nation of the Prophet because they united in fighting against the grandson of their Prophet. He says, that's where the wrath of God will happen, with this nation, this current nation. So, again, it's many moving parts, many different players, but what that tells us is that it's not in the name. So you find that until today there are people who, regardless of their background, regardless of their faith, regardless of what school of thought they have, whatever, regardless of what Ayatollah they follow, there are opportunists among them. There are people who are like mercenaries, they're looking for a quick buck, and they're willing to screw people over for that. So what does that tell you? It tells you that what Imam Hussein was fighting against wasn't just a name. He wasn't fighting against the brand. He was fighting against the type. And that type can exist in anyone. It can exist in a Muslim, it can exist in a non-Muslim. So the message is much, much larger than what we perceive it to see. And really what we should be asking ourselves, if we want to truly evaluate ourselves, is based on my ethics and based on my morals and based on my personality and based on my habits and based on what type of person, what type of individual I am I going to find myself on one side of the camp or on the other side of the camp? Because we all say to Imam Hussein that we wish we were on your side. Ya laytana kunna ma'akum. We all say it. But that means that I'm willing to do the things which are necessary to define who I am as an individual to be able to then count myself as a part of your camp. If not, if I'm an opportunist, if I have the attributes of an opportunist or a mercenary or someone like that, then I'll most likely end up on the other side of the battlefield. And that requires a little bit of self-evaluation. So we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to evaluate ourselves. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make clear for us our priorities. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالصبر وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين نحمده ونسبحه ونقدسه على آلائه ونعمائه ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن سيدنا محمد عبده ورسوله اللهم صل وسلم وزد وبارك وترحم على محمد وآل محمد كما صليت وسلمت وباركت وترحمت على إبراهيم وآل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد وصل اللهم وسلم على أوصيائه وخلفائه وعترته وأهل بيته حاليا أمير المؤمنين وقائد الغر المحجلين وعلى البضعة الطاهرة فاطمة الزهراء سيدة نساء العالمين وعلى سبط نبي الرحمة وسيد شباب أهل الجنة الحسن والحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي والخلف الهادي المهدي عجل الله تعالى فرجه وسهل مخرجه وجعلنا من أنصاره وأعوانه عباد الله أوصيكم ونفسي بتقوى الله عز وجل. Following up to what we were just speaking about, and that is that not looking at what happened on that day on a surface level, you find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, on the surface, yes, he was a warrior. And he was brave, and he was courageous, and he was committed. But we also have to understand that that bravery and that courage and that conviction came from somewhere. And that on the inside, Imam Hussein was a man of great spiritual strength. Not only was he, of course, physically strong, and to endure what happened on that day required mental strength, it required mental toughness. Spiritually, the Imam was very strong. And just to point to one example, really a treasure chest in the supplications of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam is the supplication of Imam Hussein on the day of Arafat. Imam Hussein had a certain supplication on the day of Arafat, which is the day before Eid al-Adha, the Feast of the Sacrifice, during the Hajj season. And it was a supplication which he taught to his companions on that specific day. So the narration, if you read the narration, it's narrated by two brothers who were companions of the Imam, who happened to perform the pilgrimage with the Imam. And they witnessed him as he walked out of his tent on that day under the sky, under the sun. And when he recited the supplication, it's really, I don't know how to really describe it, because this isn't something that the Imam had to write and compose. Sometimes when you're writing a letter or when you're writing an email, you know, you have to delete a sentence and add a sentence, and you sit there, should I send this email? And then no, you have to write it again. And or if you're writing a paper for school, it's the same thing. Did I say the right thing? But you find that with the Imams, whenever they taught a supplication they would always teach through recitation, it was not like they had to think of something and write a script before. It was like they were having a natural conversation with God. And that reveals how much they knew about God that they can speak and recite in a certain way. You know, when you know a lot about somebody, when you have a friend and you know everything about him, you've had this friend for the past 20 years, you know him inside out, you don't have to think, well, what do I talk about with this person? Do I talk about the weather? Do I talk about sport? you talk to whatever you know about this person. That's what makes that person a close friend, an intimate friend. So that's the kind of supplication that this was. And in that you'll find that Imam Hussein had a deep spiritual connection with God. And that's where his mental and physical strength came from. It was preceded by spiritual strength. So the Imam says, O Allah, in one part of the dua, he says, مَتَى غِبْتَ حَتَّى تَحْتَاجُ إِلَىٰ دَلِيلٍ يَدُلُّ عَلَيْكَ. He said, when did you ever disappear so that you would need something to point in your direction? Sometimes if something is out of sight, if it disappears or if it's out of sight, you need a big sign that says, this way, this is where this thing is. He says, Oh Lord, you never disappeared for me to search for something that's going to point towards you. And sometimes we spend our entire life trying to search for that one thing, that one sign that's going to make us believe. And Imam Hussein says, you'd never disappeared in the first place for me to want anything to point to your direction. And he says, in that supplication, he says, مَاذَا فَقَدَ مَنْ وَجَدَكَ. A person who has found you, what has he lost? A person who finds God, he's lost nothing. And the opposite, وَمَاذَا وَجَدَ مَنْ فَقَدَكَ. He who has lost you, what has he found? Is there anything for you to find in this world that's going to replace God if God is not in your life? And if God is in your life, is there anything in this world that's going to replace Him? Nothing, absolutely nothing. And he says, عَمِيَتْ عَيْنٌ لَا تَرَاكَ عَلَيْهَا رَقِيبًا. He says that the eye that does not recognize you, O Lord, looking upon it, that eye is truly blind. Meaning a person who completely forgets that there is an eye, that there is a being, a creator, watching for him, looking out for him, protecting him, blessing him, sustaining him, nurturing him. He says, and the eye, the human eye that can't see that is completely blind. So this reveals that the Imam had a very deep spiritual relationship with God, which preceded the physical and the physical toughness and the mental toughness. There was spiritual toughness, and that's why Imam Hussein was able to do what he did willingly, wholeheartedly, full of conviction, full of love. And so we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to be among those who, whatever we do in our life, we are able to do out of conviction and out of love and out of understanding. We ask God to allow us to strengthen ourselves spiritually so that we can strengthen ourselves for the world. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on this day to bless us and to bring healing to all those who are suffering around the world. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to be agents of peace. And let us recite this verse 5 times to bring healing to those who are our loved ones, in our families, and our friends, and to all those who are across the world that need our supplication. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Amman yujibul muhtarra idha da'ahu wa yakshifu al-su' Amman yujibul muhtarra idha da'ahu wa yakshifu al-su' Amman yujibul muhtarra idha da'ahu wa yakshifu al-su' أمن يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء أمن يجيب المضطر إذا دعاه ويكشف السوء اللهم اغفر للمؤمنين والمؤمنات والمسلمين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات تابع بيننا وبينهم بالخيرات إنك مجيب الدعوات إنك قاضي الحاجات إنك على كل شيء قدير برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين. Brothers and sisters, 2 quick announcements. Tomorrow, inshallah, at 7 p.m., we will have the monthly Arabic session beginning at 7 p.m. with the Salatul Maghrib and Isha. And this upcoming week will be the first week of the Ahlul Bayt seminary classes taking place. Inshallah, there is still time to register for that. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.